Welcome to Canada's Podcast.
Hello, this is Robert Smigel with Canada's Podcast, where we talk to the entrepreneurs who are making it happen here in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Today, our guest is Trevor Van Hemert. After briefly attempting employment in his early 20s, Trevor resigned with no plan and bought a $150 bike trailer for scooping up merch, street-side piles for consignment. That faithful purchase led to the offer to take over a struggling bicycle-based compost pickup operation in Victoria called Pedal to Pedal. He bought it from the decrepitude into a brief golden age before the city brought its own taxpayer-funded compost trucks in to crush all the green waste operators out of business. Undiscouraged, Trevor launched his bucket website, 5gallonideas.com, to showcase dozens of repurposed projects for the countless buckets in his now useless business inventory. Having established a pattern of redeeming struggling enterprises, Trevor was presented an opportunity to buy an arcade manufacturer in Vancouver. After a grueling negotiation process, he and his business partner took possession of the 13-year-old salvage company operation in April 2004. Trevor, welcome to Canada's Podcast. I appreciate you taking the time today to share your entrepreneurial journey.
Thanks, Robert. It's good to be on. And that was a great intro. Well written.
Yes, very well done. Yeah, you've got quite a history. So we're going to dive into some of this stuff. So let's just kind of go over some broad stroke stuff. Tell us a little bit more about yourself. Are you born and raised in Vancouver? I see Victoria's in there. Are you from Victoria or Vancouver?
I was born in Ontario, but my dad's from this area. So we've been here a few generations. And I returned soon after becoming an adult from where I grew up. And the rest of my family's now followed me here. So you could say that we're from Vancouver, but I kind of traveled the world as a kid. My parents did missionary work, and then we moved all over. So I've kind of been all over, but I've been here for, gosh, almost 20 years now.
Okay. Now, you've been an entrepreneur. Have you ever had like a regular day job?
Yeah. When I was growing up, I had, well, I guess you wouldn't call it a day job. It was like after school. I worked at a bagel shop. And then in college, which I did for one semester, and then stopped going to class for a second semester and kind of quit college after that. But I gave my energies to my job at the time, which was at Radio Shack. So that's when I learned sales. I learned a lot of good technology, how technology works and how to repair like broken stuff. And my job at Radio Shack, again, that was just a part-time gig that I did while in schooling. And it was all part-time, even when I wasn't in school, it was all part-time up until I graduated the BCIT radio program here in Burnaby. And then I got that day job, and I held the day job. It was kind of a dream job for me, working at the university, doing web design stuff, kind of before there was really programs for web design. I learned web design back in 04, just self-taught from internet tutorials and stuff. So I did that, lasted about 8 months. The dream job wasn't such a dream for me. And then it's just been a string of various projects ever since then.
Okay. So you did learn, it sounds like the Radio Shack experience, you learned some key skills that you could pass on.
Yeah, I'd say Radio Shack was the best job that I had, or most valuable job for me, for my skill base. I actually worked at the Canadian Radio Shack as well, which is called The Source by Circuit City. So I worked at both. Yeah, I would say that was for me the best, taught me the best skill for using.
Canada's Podcast is your gateway to success in the world of entrepreneurship. Start listening today. Canada'sPodcast.com. Subscribe now.
Okay, you've got a lot of companies and so forth that you've started, but let's maybe talk about the most recent, the arcade company and starting the company.
Sure.
You obviously needed financing in that company. And so what does that look like? You've got financing. You're starting this company, and how will you make money on the arcade business? So that you can.
Okay, so the financing, getting the money together to purchase the business, because it's not one that I founded. It's a 13-year-old business that I purchased. part of the negotiation process with the guy I bought it from was to tell him when we were negotiating the price, was to tell a story about some shoes, because he remarked on the quality of my shoes, which is his own sales tactic, because he feels people out for like the wealth that they have. And they are very nice shoes. They're, what are they, Blundstones, like those slip-on boots from Australia with steel toes and everything, very clean. And I said, oh, I'm so glad that you mentioned the shoes, because I've got this theory about thrift stores that I want to tell you about. The retail, this retail theory. And that's that a retail store has three primary expenses. One of those expenses is labor. Another of those expenses is their location. And the third expense is the product itself, of course. That's the merchandise. And I said, with a thrift store, the merchandise doesn't cost the retailer any money. They get that donated. That's true even for corporate thrift stores like Value Village. Okay. And they pass that savings on to the customer, which is me. So that's why you go to Value Village and you can get stuff so much cheaper than you can at a traditional retail establishment. Okay, but there is a certain class of thrift stores, such as a hospital auxiliary thrift store, where the labor is also free. And these are volunteers because they're volunteers, right? And there's yet another class of thrift stores, which I call the church basement thrift store, where all three of the primary costs for this retail establishment are free, because they are getting the venue or the lease, they're getting that for free as well. So everything is free. The staff are volunteer, the product is donated, and the facility that they're operating the business out is free of cost because it's a church. And they also don't have taxes because they're a church. And I told him, I got these excellent boots, these $300 boots from a church basement thrift store. And I told him, Matt, I'm a bargain hunter. So that's why I'm here negotiating to buy this particular business from you, is because I can smell out a deal. So I was able to purchase that business with a partner, which reduces my costs for what I had on hand. So I didn't require financing, because I can do that with the money that I can pull together from my own, you know, just like personal savings. Okay. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, yeah.
I've never gotten a bank loan of any kind, other than, well, I got student loans here in Canada. But one of the great things about Canada is that the government likes to forgive your loans and give you bursaries and everything. So even when I take a loan, there's that bargain hunting aspect of that. So you get the loan for like negative 50% total interest over the life of the loan. Thanks, Canada.
Right. Okay. What piece of knowledge or information about your industry, could be the arcade business or any industry that you've been in, that you could share that would benefit our listeners that the common person may not know about?
Knowledge about this particular business?
Yeah. Let's take the most recent one. The arcade business. The arcade business sounds like it's something that was started in the 80s. It's obviously nostalgic. Your market's unique. Right. You're going after people who are probably later in their life and they want to get Pac-Man or whatever they want. What have you learned so far about this business that you could parlay?
Well, one thing that I learned about this business relating to its demographics, as you said, back in the 80s or even earlier with some of these things, some of these systems, is that a demographic actually evolves over time. So there's a great book or a series of books written by demographers. I say that they're the best demographers alive today, and that's Neil Howe. Actually, the other guy's dead. It's Strauss and Howe. What is it called? The Fourth Turning. Are you familiar with this book? So they talk about demographics and how they evolve through time and generations. A demographic is actually part of a generation. You know, you have millennials, you have Generation X, you have the baby boomers, you have the silent generation before that, and they move through time. So actually, if you were really to go in depth into your demographic, which any seller or marketer must, is to understand that a demographic actually has a history, and they have a location in the interplay between the generations, and each generation has its own characteristics that repeats in a four generational cycle, is the theory that's put together by Stress and Howe, and described in The Fourth Turning and described in their book The Generations, and in a couple other books. So I would say that learning what I have about the demographic of this particular business, which is Generation X, it's actually a very it's a very underserved or undermarketed to demographic, because it's not one of the dominant ones alive today, which would be the millennials and the baby boomers. My first successful website, which was about a video game called Dwarf Fortress, our demographic was millennials. And this was at a time when millennials were just getting out of high school and were poor. There was nothing to sell them that they would buy. There was no income in this website. My second successful website was targeted toward baby boomers who had all the money at the time. It did much better as a result, even though the traffic pattern within the first 3-4 months of launching that website was similar. And then obviously this business, as I've stated already, is a Generation X demographic. And that generation will evolve through time, and their needs will evolve, and their wants and what will jazz them in their nostalgia will change, will evolve, but much of it will also remain the same. So when you're marketing to these guys, which are between 45 and 55, as we move the business forward through the years, we have to realize that we have to ratchet that up and understand that demographic as it ages and as it develops into its later years, like the baby boomers are now, where they are not contributing as much as they did 10 years ago into the economy. They are now receiving like their elder care, and they're receiving their pensions. They're not necessarily having a job anymore. A lot of them are retiring. So understanding that is something that this business has given me more context on.
Okay, cool. Let's talk a little bit about British Columbia being an entrepreneur.
Yeah, right.
In BC. I want you to give
best
us
place
some
on earth.
Okay, best place on earth. Give us some of the good points about starting a business in British Columbia, but I also want you to give us some of the challenges that you encountered along.
Well, yeah, sure. So what's great about a socialist system like the one we have in Canada and in British Columbia is that you've got a safety net, no matter who you are. Even if you're the entrepreneurial type, even if you're a business owner, you've always got that social safety net to fall back on. And particularly for someone who is an entrepreneur whose income might be feast and famine, that keeps us fed, that keeps us housed when we're going through the lean years. And I've had lean years. All of us have had lean years who consider ourselves lifelong entrepreneurs, I'm sure, other than, you know, that special 20% of the 20% of the 20% who becomes a billionaire. As far as challenges of British Columbia, well, there are high taxes in this place, but those high taxes will affect you when you're doing well. That's when you're expected to pay for the social safety net, right? As far as like paperwork and red tape and stuff, I've found that that there are exemptions for those who are earning under a certain amount. Once again, it's part of that social safety net. So for example, when I ran a web services business, which I did for a time, I'm not required to collect GST above $30,000 in British Columbia in particular. So that gives me actually an advantage over the larger firms, because I can compete better on prices, just for my customer can save 5 or 7% or whatever it is, because I'm a small operator, right? So rather than small guys like me, solo entrepreneurs like me being at a disadvantage, like you could consider they are in the United States. They look out for the little guy better here.
Okay. Now, I want you to imagine you've been in British Columbia for a while, but you get a lot of immigration coming to Canada and particularly BC. If you were to start all over again and you just moved in to BC, not knowing anyone, how would you start over again, knowing what you've learned over the many years, if you were to start fresh coming into this country? What would you do differently than you did?
Well, what I would do differently is I would prioritize building up a network, like a social network. Not using like these networking events and conferences and stuff, but just going out and meeting people and developing connections, because I've found that the connections that I've built, a great effort here in Vancouver, it's much easier in Victoria when I spent some time there, but particularly building up those social connections is difficult here in Vancouver. But once you have those, that becomes a support network and a base of power. And you can solve difficult problems such as housing, for example, which we're one of the most expensive places for housing in the world here in Vancouver. But if you know the right person, you can get a deal on that that could represent savings of tens of thousands of dollars potentially in a year, just because you're friends with somebody who may have a basement suite and you may be able to help them with something, help them with childcare, whatever it might be. If I had to do it all over again, I would prioritize that more than I did, because it took years for me to get to the point where I am now. And it could have been done quicker if I had, because those were the big things for me that were the big wins, came through the social connections.
Okay. How do you define success and how do you celebrate success? I know that, you know, like you've mentioned, we have our ups and downs, and obviously you go through doubt, fear, success. Do you try and keep an even keel? Is that how you kind of manage through that? Don't go too high, don't go too low?
Yeah, I think, well, success for me is wealth of time. So part of managing the drawbacks of success, which can be and often are, especially for entrepreneurs or people who call themselves entrepreneurs, they end up just giving more of themselves and more of their time once their business starts to show its own success. And I read a book a number of years ago that has been very influential on me, and that's The E-Myth Revisited. You've probably heard of this. It's about entrepreneurship. And it describes entrepreneurship as not working in your business, not working for your business, but working on your business. And it describes entrepreneurship as an engineering, as a type of engineering where you're engineering systems, and it is those systems that are working for you and getting your business to work for you. So that can mean online automation. So for my website, 5 Gallon Ideas, the online automation is done through Amazon affiliate program, because this is a business whose immense success I can leverage in the form of sales commissions, as well as the Google AdSense program, which automatically will bid the highest price for the advertising space that I have on my website. And I only have to set it up once, as well as a website which sits on a server that I can pay $20 a month for and have a permanent home online that just runs itself, essentially using hardware and software and other people's businesses. one thing that's different about the business that I'm involved in now is that it has employees, like staff. And that's another system, of course, that is a business working for, you know, you have components of the business working for the business, and then the business is engineered by myself.
Stay ahead of the game with our expert tips and strategies that will help your business thrive in a digital era. Canadaspodcast.com. Subscribe now.
Let's talk a little bit about work-life balance. Obviously, entrepreneurs work all the time, and they're always on it, nonstop, most entrepreneurs.
Can be.
Yeah. Do you Do you kind of partition your days so that you're taking care of yourself and taking time off to think and reflecting and refreshing and recharging, or are you just on it all the time?
I'm on all the time now because I have a new business that needs a lot of my input right now. But I'm always keeping in mind that my role is to engineer this business to be self-sustaining, like you would engineer a child, your child, to eventually be self-sustaining. So I expect a lot more of myself now than I would say a year, 2 years, 3 years down the road when those systems are in place where they do not require my direct attention the way it is required now. So as far as work-life balance, I took 10 years off of work after I brought my website to the point through daily difficult effort, because I knew what my goal was, and my goal was time freedom and time wealth. And I knew what I needed to achieve that goal. And I set the bar low in that particular instance by also working on my proficiency with my personal finances. So the less you need of an income, foul paper, I call it, cash, the less of a barrier money will be for one to win the time freedom, if that is your ultimate goal.
Okay. What two words do you use to describe yourself? You had someone say, describe yourself. What would be those two words that have been dominant?
If there were two words to describe myself, it would be creative, like a creative solution, like creative problem solver. And if I was going to use another word or term, it would be, I don't know, that's what I got, creative problem solver. I don't think about myself.
If you weren't doing what you're doing now, what would you like to do for a profession? Money didn't really wasn't a factor.
For a profession.
You could do anything. What would it be?
Well, for the last 5 or 6 years, maybe even longer, I've been involved in a certain type of volunteering, which is on boards of directors. And I did do that for free. And I enjoy that immensely. And typically, I'll last at a job about 8 months. But I did this for 6 or 7 years. So I think the best answer to that question would be to remark on what I have already done for free as a profession, which is directing institutions, assisting other board directors in directing institutions. It's kind of an entrepreneurial role, actually, because you're once again engineering the systems that run an institution. In this case, there's a housing co-op that I was president for, and there's a community center where I sit on the board of that. And these are valuable institutions to their communities and to the people who live in the housing co-op. And being in that role really it excites me, and I like to give the best. I can give the best of myself in those roles. So something like that.
Let's talk a little bit about mentors. I'm not sure if you had mentors or not, but if there's any advice you've received along your entrepreneurial journey,
yes,
what would that be? Is someone giving you or said something to you that was quite profound or resonated with you and you kind of use that stuck with you over the years? What would that be?
Yeah. So the guy who gave me the compost business, Matt, he was a mentor for me when I was in my early 20s. And something profound that he told me that I'll always remember and I've adhered to is, well, he went out to do logging work every winter and would live during the year on EI, which is employment insurance. And that allowed him to subsidize the business that we ran together. And one thing he told me is that if he's going to exercise, he wants to be paid for it. So get paid to exercise, have a physical job, was his recommendation to me. And that has, that's been good advice. So instead of paying a gym membership, have the gym membership pay you in a way. There was another guy who helped me a lot. His name's Ed Dale. He's in Australia. Now, he doesn't know me, but he was one of these marketing guys who sells like, oh, here's how to make money online kind of thing. And I got a lot of good information from his programs that helped me build the website that I mentioned earlier up to where I wanted it to be, to win myself the time freedom to raise my kids and volunteer in the community and that sort of thing. And what I remember most from his advice is to define success as $1. That was what was different about his program for building websites. And there are many of them out there. But he said, this is his 30-day challenge. And what he challenges you to do as someone who's just learning to make money online is to make $1. Just $1. So he's not promising, you know, oh, earn $3,000 a day or earn six figures doing this program. His challenge is for you to just earn $1. And that is so much more approachable for people, for anyone who's trying to get into any kind of entrepreneurship. Just make one sale. Just sell a monitor. Because then you can build off that and you can see what works and you can analyze that because now you have a point of data. But if you're promising thousands and thousands of dollars, you're going to be eternally frustrated because it takes a long time to get to that point. It can take years. It can take decades before you can build your business up to that point. So defining success early, defining success as something that you can achieve early, helped me get to the point where I am. And that's good advice that I also offer to other people. And I also had, I'll just talk about one because I wrote these down, is Jacob Lund Fisker from Early Retirement Extreme. And this is a guy who learned how to live in the San Francisco Bay Area on $6,000 a year. He figured it out. He is an engineer and he engineered his life in a way where he would need the minimum, a minimum of income coming in. And this is what helped me take hold and control my own personal finances and my own personal requirements for money to the point where I was able to achieve what I did as early as I did and retire at 23 or 24.
Okay, sounds good. Let's talk a little bit just about negotiation. We're not going to go deep into this, but
oh, sure.
Maybe just give us a 1 minute a scenario of some pointers if a young entrepreneur is going into negotiation. What are some key things to look out for?
Okay. So you want me to be brief. So I will mention the story I told earlier about the bargain hunting that I do and that thrift store story that I told the guy I was negotiating last with. And the bigger picture there is to get who it is you're negotiating with to like you, to be friends with them. It's like win friends and influencing people. You tell stories, you share of yourself, you ask them to share in return and make friends before you try to buy something from them for cheaper or try to sell them something. You want to be able to make a personal connection with them.
Okay.
At least that's what has worked for me.
Good. Okay. We're going to wrap things up. How can our listeners get hold of you? And is there anything you'd like to add before you leave us today?
I have nothing else to add, but you can contact me, Trevor, at arcadetimemachine.com. That's our new business. Or you can contact me through the contact form at my website about 5 Gallon Buckets, 5GallonIdeas.com.
And what is that? Just out of curiosity, what is that 5 Gallon Ideas?
That's my website about 5 Gallon Buckets. So I wrote, I think over the months that I worked on it, over 200 articles full of pictures that I had taken myself, full of projects, many of them that I had built myself on different uses for 5 Gallon Buckets around the house. So this is something that everybody's familiar with. This is something that everybody has. I can solve problems that everybody has with buckets or about buckets using the material on this website, which just sits there. I wrote it all 10 years ago, and I still have tens of thousands of visitors a year. And there was nothing else like it on the internet, which is why I plowed into it with both shoulders, because it was like a blue ocean type of opportunity, and those don't come around very often. So I've gone ideas.com.
Yeah, okay, check that out. Trevor, thanks for coming on the show. I've learned a lot about you, and I'm sure our listeners have as well.
Thanks, Robert.
See you next time.